A war memorial. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. To the immortal honor of the men of Glasgow who fell in the Great War, this memorial is dedicated in proud and grateful recognition by the city of Glasgow.
When we think of the First World War, the faces we picture in the trenches are white. But from 1914 onwards, soldiers joined up from across the empire. Thousands from the Caribbean paid their own passage to Britain to defend what many of them called the motherland.
Poet Jackie Kay.
And the British Tommies weren't all the colour that they are in the old films either. Every soldier has his own individual story, and this is one of them.
A Scottish soldier. A modest 1930s semi.
In 2006, a young couple in Glasgow found a box of photos, diaries and letters in their attic.
Jackie carefully opens a book.
This film tells Arthur Roberts' story using Arthur's own words and the poetry he inspired me to write.
March 1917.
The bands are playing good old, and you feel as if you're going too. But when one sees the mothers and the sisters and sweethearts crying as they keep step with their loved ones, and the fathers walking silent with eyes red and shining with unshed tears, it makes one feel creepy, especially when the big drum booms and the kettle drums roll. But somebody must go.
Old film of new recruits marching through the streets, then soldiers exercising in a field. In a reconstruction, a young black man.
Arthur Roberts enlisted on the 13th of February 1917. He was 19.
Duddingston Camp, Edinburgh, 1917.
Dear Aunt, I hope you're drawing the half pay all right. If your Lily could spare a time, you might please make me a little cake, say about a pound or half a pound. It won't cost much, and it's seldom we get what you call really good cake here.
Author Morag Miller.
And this is Arthur, which would appear to be him in Bristol. And you know, beautiful picture. And that's when he's with his mother, Laura Dan Roberts. And the father is David Roberts. He's a ship steward. Something happened after Arthur was about 7 or 8. The family split up. And that's when Arthur came to Glasgow. He attended Kent Road Higher Grade School, where he was a very accomplished scholar. He stayed there till he was 18, and when he left there, he then became an apprentice in Harland and Wolff in Clydeside, and he trained to be a fitter.
When he looks in the mirror, it's his mother's face he sees, running into his father's. His mother, the West Country lass. His father, the man from the Caribbean. He has his nose, her eyes. His cheekbones, a kind of no man's land, somewhere between the two of them. And his skin, a mix of both colours, is the light of his mother, the dark of his father. Something in his own fixed gaze made him see himself as part ghost, as if he was on the cusp of something about to emerge, as if for some seconds of lost time he was a stranger to himself, as if he wasn't quite expecting to see himself in this light, met, made whole by his father, his mother, in his joined up face. He's about to go to war. One last look in the mirror then, just in case. And then off to France, with his mother's eyes, his father's nose packed into his face. For all his days, for all his nights, and all his days.
Arthur poses in his uniform for photos.
As well as his writing, Arthur painted watercolours, and although they're not great art. There's something pretty special about them. I think he wanted to bear witness. I think he wanted to paint the truth.
We are expecting to go into the front line tonight.
Saturday, 9th of June, 1917.
Suddenly, a couple of very lights shot into the air, coming down in a big green blaze.
An animated painting.
I was greatly amused with the fireworks.
When the corporal informed me that I was to take first watch, I said, "What have I to do?" He said, "This your first time?" I said, "Yes." "Well," said he, "just stand up on that step and shoot anybody you see who looks like a German." He was walking away when, suddenly turning around, he said, "By the by, have you ever seen a German?" I told him I'd come into contact with German barbers and waiters. "Ahem," he muttered, becoming vastly amused. "If you see anybody, call the other chaps at once. We've a patrol out tonight, and they won't like being mistaken for Germans."
In the reconstruction, Arthur looks up at the green light in the night sky.
Happily, nothing happened that night, and I really wondered what the people at home were making such a fuss about.
Morning light, and Arthur is still on watch. He glances about behind the rolls of barbed wire. Turning, he steps down and walks along the trench. He places his rifle against the wooden wall and now sleeps under his blanket.
On his fourth day at the front without a wash, Arthur went off to find a bit of privacy to de-louse himself.
He checks his shirt.
What a lovely day it was, and how quiet everything was. As I meandered along, watching the high explosives bursting high up in the sky, my thoughts were as far away from my surroundings as those little lumps of cotton wool.
That first dead soldier is a sight that is practically photographed on my brain. The shell had burst in the middle of the trench, so that now for several yards, there was no trench. There, on the sloping side of the crater, lay somebody's son. The uniform was almost one brownish-red stain. The equipment appeared as if some bigger man had just hung it on the body. It was a mass of tangled buckles and straps. The whole of the victim's back had been almost blown out. From the hips, the body might have belonged to another man altogether.
Arthur runs through a trench and sits on a bench with shaking hands.
I flung myself down helplessly and made strenuous efforts to regain my self-control. I succeeded at length. I set off again. When I came to the fateful spot again, which appeared to happen very quickly, I inwardly tightened my self-determination and quickened my pace. Then, I took one sudden look over my shoulder. There was the crater. But the corpse was gone. Completely vanished.
Parting glance.
There's that shuttered, sick moment when you must look again, though you know you shouldn't. When you turn fast, a flash of distress for one last look, and dear God, you cannot credit your eyes. There was a crater, but the corpse had gone, completely vanished, only eyes in mud, staring at eternity. But you will carry it, the dead weight, your nerves strung, your senses dazed, on your back for the rest of your days.
soldiers relaxing in a field.
Arthur's unit was on rotation. You couldn't spend long in the frontline trenches, it was too hard. Most soldiers would do about 10 days a month in the trenches, and only 3 days of that right on the front line.
Today went as well as can be expected. I saw an observation balloon catch fire through heat. I don't know if the observers escaped.
Arthur paints a picture.
Spent a lazy day today. Received a letter of bad news from home.
Heading through the trenches in slow motion. Monday, 30th of July, 1917.
I am now back in the trenches. Jerry's shelling like mad. We go to the front line tonight and over the top in the morning.
Arthur eats with a thoughtful expression.
My thoughts are mixed and unsettled at present. And I can't say I'm feeling too brave, but it has to be done, so the sooner the better. The shelling's getting on my nerves.
The trenches soon were so badly shelled that in places we were walking in the open where big shell holes had taken the place of that bit of the trench. In the still surviving lengths of trench, the dead men were often so numerous it was impossible to proceed without walking on him. In whispers, we were sorted into our proper sections, waiting for the command from our officer who was constantly gazing at his wristwatch. I wondered, was I in the thoughts of somebody at that precise moment? I began to dream of what might be. Would a great chance come my way? If so, would I make the best of it? Of course I would. I am a man now. A real man, thought I.
A green flash as Arthur waits with others in the dark.
Then, in a flash, I saw again our front line and its occupants. Oh my God. Would the supports who would follow in our tracks find me mangled and torn? This waiting is worse than 100 deaths.
Fiery red explosions, then faces glowing green as emerald light flashes in the night sky.
Forward, men!
That order saved me. I'd been allowed to brood for too long.
They go over the top.
It might sound strange, but during my active service days, my one worry was I was frightened that I should become afraid.
You were frightened that you would become afraid and that fear would strip it all away. Your uniform, the boots, the patriotism, your unit, the bravery, the sense of a mission. And waiting up ahead on the front line, fear itself, quaking and trembling, all legs and ankles, till you were feared, stripped of everything, naked as the day you emerged, a small boy out of the womb, with no sense slipping out of that cocoon of the fire or the trenches or the stench, that men would kill and kill again, that lives would count for naught under the watchful eye of the moon.
Arthur's animated painting.
The enemy pestered us with slow but annoying fire. As we plunged on, one of our section who was walking at my left suddenly collapsed. A splinter had hit him in the abdomen. Strict orders had been issued before the battle. Nobody but stretcher bearers was to stop for the wounded. We therefore, after a sympathetic glance, pushed on. Besides, it might be anybody's turn next.
Footage of explosions on the front.
It was now morning. We were now exposed to the German machine gunners. In a short time, officers were without men, and men were without officers. We were fed up. I, for one, had got to the stage. I cared little what happened. The last issue of food rations I'd received had been 3 days before. It was during one of Jerry's short, sharp, vicious bombardments that I lost the party. Or perhaps the party lost me. I didn't know. I didn't care. Simply got my head below cover and waited.
He lost a party, or the party lost him, and the list of losses came almost nightly. How already he'd lost his smile, his grace. How at night, or under the morning mist, he lost face. How for miles he plodded, making his list of losses. He knew the faces of loss as intimately as his own. He knew Lossie's husky voice, its strange frown. He knew the way its hair fell out, the way Loss fell down. He knew Loss. He'd been in Lossie's town.
Arthur is welcomed back to the trenches in the half-light.
Next thing I mind is my section officer giving me a good drink of rum.
He's handed a parcel and unwrapped some fruitcake, then eats it hungrily.
And the next thing, he was half lying against a wagon in the rain, and who knew where he came from or to where he would go? After the third battle of wipers, they were soon dispersed, and he kept that loss close, lest he should ever forget.
He sits eating the cake. Now he's in a meadow checking his boots. Sunday, 5th of August, 1917.
We rested today. A memorial service took place in the village in honour of the men who fell in action. I wrote home. A new pair of boots was supplied to me this afternoon.
Arthur suffered from trench foot, where the foot begins to rot. Although it caused him problems for the rest of his life, it was never bad enough to get him out of the army.
We were paraded today to hear the sentence of 5 deserters. 1 got death, 4 got 15 years. Today has been fairly quiet, but Jerry usually manages to catch 1 or 2 with one of his whizbangs. One of our lance corporals caught a whizbang. He fell on the food rations, covering them with blood. So now we can't eat him.
October 1917.
Today was very wet. I got my first love letter today. But I'm glad to say Mr. Cupid missed me. I was at a rough and tumble dance this evening. No ladies were there, of course. It was the first dance I've had since being in France.
Archive footage of soldiers dancing in kilts.
This is the last day of 1917. I hope next year will bring peace. I'm sitting by myself in a dark hut, waiting for the new year.
He looks round at the cheering and smiles slightly before taking a swig from a bottle.
He knew the colour of loss, his park benches. He knew the smell of loss, took him to the trenches. He knew the Glacket glazes, the lost son's faces. He knew loss was not choosy, it could pick anyone. He knew grief keeps a different clock, that to loss, morning or evening were the same. That he could find loss stock still, lame, or that it could run behind in the rain. He knew it could jog ahead in real time. He knew loss's game, its hiding places. He knew he wasn't the only one counting down. He knew loss. He'd been in loss's town.
January 1918.
I have to appear before the OC in the morning on the charge of willfully destroying a pair of boots. I can safely swear I have done nothing of the sort.
I was under arrest.
I was marched to the OC's office.
Willful destruction of property is a serious offence.
The OC says to me, "Will you accept my punishment?" I instantly refused. The OC then gave me the option of his punishment or a court-martial. I chose a court-martial.
Dismissed.
I was marched to the guardroom to await my trial. And during my confinement, I worked on my case. About 4:45 p.m, the police came to take me to the office again. The OC now informs me that there is not enough evidence to convict me, and that I have escaped his punishment by a bold stroke. My sheet is still clean, but it was a close shave. I'm fairly in the limelight over the whole case. All the boys are congratulating me. The corporal who charged me is wild, and he will catch me if possible. But I'm wide awake. Trust me.
He'd watched the lost ships sail down the Clyde and listened to the noises from childhood loss, the bells and the jingles and midnight owls. And for years after the war, it seemed that all the losses followed him in their old dead boots. And the losses still to come walked ahead in their old dead boots. And everywhere around him was the thud of loss, heavy-footed with trench feet, thickly coated in mud, seeking the drowsy, the exhausted, the run down. He knew loss. He'd been in loss's town.
When this bloody war is over, no more soldiering for me. When I've got my civvy clothes on, oh, how happy I will be.
The diary stops in 1918. When the war ended, Arthur came back to Glasgow, to Harland and Wolff, to finish his apprenticeship to help build the ships that made Glasgow famous.
Arthur steps up to Jackie, picks up his diary and heads off. Now he walks across a green hillside overlooking modern-day Glasgow. Clyde.
It was a place of steel, rivets and nails, men swinging their hammers in violent air, fighting the work. The river was gunmetal grey, stretching away under a lead sky. And when the ship slipped into the Clyde, grown men cried. It was a place of memory, dreams and journeys, men sailing down the water, away for their sons and daughters, waving goodbye forever and a day, to the Firth, to the Forth, over the Red Bridge, over the Luggy Water, over the Carron River, the wind blowing your hair into the Irish Sea. The river holds the grey seals, the carp, the perch, the eels, the harbour porpoise, the sense of purpose, the dawning of a new day.
Archive newsreel with the caption, "The End of a Well-Fought War." The Peace Procession, 1919.
In July 1919, the peace march didn't contain any black troops, which started a process that, deliberately or not, wiped out the memory of the black contribution to Britain's victory in the war.
Arthur looking out over the Clyde.
When this bloody war is over, no more soldiering for me.
Jackie is on the bridge.
When I get my civvy clothes on, oh, how happy I will be.
We know Arthur experienced racism at the shipyard. He got called black bastard and nigger. He just kept his head down and got on with his job.
Arthur walks along the old docks.
In 1919, there were race riots in seven port cities across Britain, including Glasgow, as men returning from war, faced unemployment and looked around for someone to blame. 5 men were killed in the riots. The government reaction to populist racism was to introduce immigration laws. In 1919, they extended the Alien Restriction Act. In 1925, they passed the Special Restriction Coloured Alien Seamen Order. In practice, this meant that anyone black had to produce papers proving their right to be here.
In his uniform, Arthur stands still as modern-day Glasgow bustles around him. Now he sits by a play park.
Loss, like the loss he felt when he waved goodbye to his mother. Loss, like the loss he felt when he wrote to his father. Loss, like the limbo loss caught between two cultures. Loss, like the loss when the lance corporal died at dinner. Loss, like the loss when he nearly crossed over. Loss, like love lost, like lost loves. He knew loss. He didn't need to write it down. He'd been in Lossie's old, sad town.
Photos of Arthur in a band and then with a woman.
We don't know much about Arthur's life after the war. We know he fell in love with Jessie Finnegan and they lived together for 20 years. They got married a year before Jessie died in 1957. In 1979, Arthur moved himself into a care home in Glasgow.
Care home worker, Alison.
He was a ladies' man, definitely. He used to show me his photographs when he was in the army. One of the times I said to him, oh, I said, if I was the same age as you at that age, I says, I'd have been fair taken with you. And he went, aye, and I would have been fair taken with you as well. But he was everything you would imagine and a lovely man. He really was. He never says goodbye or anything like that. He just slept away. I just hold his hand and then I knew he'd be just listening and looking at his chest that he had actually passed away. And it was very, very peaceful. Very, I don't know, I'm going to start crying now thinking about him. Very peaceful. He touched my heart so much.
Remembering Sunday, a day when paradoxically he felt forgotten. Not like that Monday when the shop steward called him a black bastard, or Tuesday when he watched them fish the suicides out the Clyde. Not like Wednesday when Cupid's arrow sailed over his head, or Thursday when Alison warmed up olive oil, massaging his trench feet. Not like Friday when he blanked his dark face from the victory parade, or Saturday when he danced alone in his room with a Zimmer. But remembering Sunday when no one remembered him and he hardly remembered himself.
Oh, how happy I will be. No more standing to attention. No more asking for a pass. You can tell the sergeant major to shove those passes up his arse.